Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you. Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Philip, shall we?
We shall, Tim.
Once again, it's just me and thee in the rugby dungeon on the Egg Chasers Rugby podcast. JB didn't let us know, well, he didn't let me know that he wasn't going to be back on this day, Sunday, as we're recording this podcast, the 11th of October, until about an hour ago, frankly.
Yeah, it was pretty late. I think he was still hoping to just kind of hijack a flight and get over here, just abandon the wedding that he's at and get over to record.
But no such luck, which means as well, the theme tune for the Egg Chasers Rugby podcast is on JB's tablet. And we can't play it out because he hasn't given us the password for it. So it's a marching band song. So I've just got us another marching band theme to kick the podcast off.
Not the same one then.
I can't find the same one. But hands in, pod on three. 1, 2, 3.
Pod.
Yeah, it's Pharrell Williams and Happy. There you go.
Close enough.
Close enough. Well, thank you very much for downloading this, the Egg Chasers Rugby podcast. We don't take ourselves or the game too seriously. We just love rugby, and we are loving what is the best Rugby World Cup ever. And we've reached the quarterfinal stage now. The group pool matches are all done and dusted. We'll be giving our thoughts on the final round of pool games, some epic matches, some huge quarterfinal matchups, and looking ahead as well, as well, definitely looking back and marvelling at what has been an amazing tournament. And do you know what, it's the bittersweet end of being England fans. Yes, it's sad that England aren't in the competition anymore for us as Englishmen, Phil, but what a competition this is.
It has, you said it very early, that it has been the best Rugby World Cup ever, and I was a little bit sceptic at first, but it fully justified. It has been absolutely brilliant, and this weekend's games alone have been absolutely superb.
What we've seen from day one to the very end is the lesser nations, the tier two teams particularly, providing so much entertainment and so much passion. And I suppose the passion and endeavour's always been there, but the skill has never been this close together.
Definitely not. And I think a lot of it, we've said it a couple of times before, a lot of it has revolved around the set piece and the ability of the smaller teams to compete at the set piece. Therefore, they've got more of their own ball, they can get more field position, more territory, and they can be in the game. Like Namibia and Argentina, there is a huge gulf in class, like in the rankings. The differences between the fully professional Argentinian players and the Namibians. But they scored some brilliant tries today. It was a really, really good, exciting game to watch.
So you can get in touch with us by tweeting to @rugbypodcast. We have got an email address as well. I need to set up a general one, but at the moment it's tim@eggchasers.com. tim@eggchasers.com. If you're on Twitter, @rugbypodcast, we love hearing your thoughts about stuff. And you can find us on the Acast app or listen on iTunes. And if you subscribe there on iTunes, then we'll make sure every episode gets delivered straight to you, because we're doing more than one episode a week on the Rugby World Cup, or we have been, and we've got the introduction as well of the Pro 12 and the Aviva Premiership this week. So we'll be previewing those and looking back over those after next weekend. But I suppose we should just say well done to all the teams that have made the quarterfinal. Valiant effort, by the way, by Scotland, but they finally succumbed and progressed through to the knockout stages of a major tournament. Well done to Scotland. We'll get to Scotland in a bit. Also, well done to Wales, despite their defeat to Australia. Plenty to talk about there.
Yeah.
And well done, Ireland. And that's where I want to start, Phil, because that's freshest in the mind. What a brave effort by the boys in green.
It was incredible. There's so many talking points from that game. At the start, it was very close. Both teams quite measured initially, a few kicks exchanged in the first half, and neither team really got the other per hand. And then the injuries, the tackling from France was brutal. The tackling from both teams was brutal, but Picamoles and Sean O'Brien in particular, the big hits that both of those boys put in. And then to lose, you talk about leaders, and we've been speaking about leaders with England.
Or lack of.
Yes, but if you look at Ireland, the forwards, the leader is Paul O'Connell, but he leads the forwards and Sexton leads the backs. And to lose both of those and then lose Peter Omani and be so dominant in the second half, because Ireland were really, really on top. I mean, if you look at the possession and territory, it's 70-30 in Ireland's favour.
Wow.
It's massive. And they really controlled that game, in this, particularly in the second half, and suffocated France. And the tries, they were very well taken. I mean, the finish of Rob Kearney to identify Michalak, and it wasn't the first time that they identified Michalak as a weak link.
By the way, Rob Kearney is a ridiculously handsome chap, isn't he? as well as being an international. And you know what? If you were picking a Lions team today, you'd have him at fullback for me.
On that performance, yes. I think Mike Brown.
I think on his performances, in the last year, probably.
I think Mike Brown. I think all of the home nations push him close, but yeah, he's in great form. But
great decision maker.
Great under the high ball. He's got a good boot on him. Good defensively, always makes yards. But Tommy Bowen and Robbie Henshaw, I thought both of those were brilliant, cutting lines.
Yeah.
I said last week, I'm sure that Joe Schmidt has got a game plan to beat France. And they used several things, but one of them was identifying Michalak as a weak link in the defensive line and having runners, both the big forward runners and the quicker guys like Henshaw, like Bow, like the Kearney brothers.
Yeah, the number of times first Henshaw took it, they missed Madigan, as it turned out, or Sexton, and just hit Henshaw up first receiver running straight at Michalak. I mean, it's not difficult, is it? That's just smart coaching.
Yes, yeah. I was really, really impressed by the whole way that Ireland played. Their set piece was very good. Lineouts and scrums, very good. Their work at the breakdown, we said it before, but it was exceptional because France were trying to slow the ball down. Particularly Eddie Benarous and Dusatoir were really trying to slow the ball down.
Yeah, there was a funny message about Benarous, and that I'm just trying to find it here on Twitter at Rugby Podcast. Yeah, it was a real crash ball on Twitter. Said, I'm pretty sure that French loosehead is better at the breakdown than the entire English back row. And it's hard to argue on that performance.
Yeah, but he didn't. It's testament to both him and Ireland, him for getting in the position, but Ireland for not letting him steal the ball.
Yeah,
it was really impressive.
Ross Petty 80 tweeted to us at Rugby Podcast. Here's a fact for you, and we know how much Phil loves a fact, and I think he might have outfacted our fact man. He said Ireland's turnovers conceded in the last three games versus France. 4-7-8. France's turnovers conceded in their last three games versus Ireland, 18-18-18.
Wow.
That's a massive amount of ball to give away to your opposition.
Yes, yeah.
You can't win games when that stat exists.
No, but it shows the potency of Omani, O'Brien and Rory Best as well. Rory Best at the breakdown is very, very good.
Well, let's talk about... Because, I mean, we'll get the news probably by the time you're listening to the podcast. There may already be a story saying it, but thanks to the slow motion action replay of Paul O'Connell's hamstring pinging, you saw it ping. I think he's done for the World Cup. Johnny Sexton being a groin injury, that's really doubtful for you can't really run with a dodgy groin.
And you can't kick if you're a 10.
You certainly can't kick.
It depends on the scale. O'Connell's did look bad. But they've got Hendo, who came in very well. He pushed Toner very close to starting anyway. It is, from a leadership point of view, huge, but they can cover. Sexton, depending on the grade of it, whether it's kind of a tweak or a tear.
Yeah, by the way, if there's one person that knows what he's talking about with injuries, it's Phil.
Things like this tend to get graded 1, 2, and 3, with 3 being... major and 8 weeks plus out, and one being a couple of weeks. So we'll see on the news next week. It looks unlikely that he'll be playing against Argentina.
Yeah,
but there's always a chance. And then Omani as well.
I know.
He's a big blow.
I know. But Chris Henry came on and did a job. In fact, the whole squad they've got a good squad. And this is exactly what England didn't have. There you go. I've said the England word. I know we have a lot of listeners in Ireland who. lambasted us for being England focused. Well, me and Phil are Englishmen. The one thing England didn't have is when one person went out, you didn't have someone who could just slot straight into that system.
Yeah.
So if Jonathan Joseph goes out, you completely reinvent the whole back line.
Yes.
With Ireland, it feels like one goes out, one comes in.
Yes.
Especially when you've got guys like Luke Fitzgerald who can play just about every
anywhere.
Position.
Keith Earls as well. Yeah. He's a very good utility player. He can play right across the outside backs. The one exception to that I would say is probably Sexton,
yeah.
Who there is a bit of a drop off from Madigan, and he is a different type of player, but he did very well in a high pressure situation. I was really impressed with the way that Madigan carried himself.
You know, it's obvious to say it, but someone that they may well be without, and if so, they are going to miss badly. It must have been you that tweeted this one out then, Phil.
The Vine.
Phil tweeted out a little Vine video of Sean O'Brien's. I mean, it was a good little jab to the midriff. Good jab to the midriff, but he punched Pascal Pape in an off-the-ball incident, which the referee and assistant referees and TMO didn't spot, but will be cited surely and will probably mean that Sean O'Brien misses at least the Argentina game.
I would expect so. I'd fully expect him to. Although there is, knowing Sean O'Brien and knowing what a powerful individual he is, I mean, if he'd actually connected with Pascal Pape, I mean, there's no real evidence that he actually hit him, because if he hit him, he would have stayed here. So I'm suggesting this just looks like he threw a punch, but there was actually no connection there.
Right. So,
In
Sean O'Brien's defence, if he'd have actually connected, then Pascal Pape wouldn't have played another game in this Rugby World Cup.
Yeah, or ever, perhaps.
Yeah, it's one of those. It'll be cruel if they're short, if they don't have O'Brien, Sexton, and O'Connell.
Yeah, and because if you take Omani out of the situation, Chris Henry can come in very well. And you can push Sean O'Brien to six or Henry to six, and the two of them can combine really well. If you're missing both Omani and Sean O'Brien, it is a slightly different situation. There's a few young guys they can bring in, but not with the experience of those boys.
I'm going to mention something, because obviously JB's not here at the moment, but something happened between the last podcast and this one that JB would have loved to have gloated about. And I just think it's my duty that I've got to mention it. JB on the last podcast gave us a little message from Sorrento in Italy, where he was just about to go and have a seafood linguine. And he said what he would do if he was at the RFU and in charge of things and coming up with a new setup for England. And he said he would get Steve Diamond in. And me and Phil I just wrote it off as JB being JB trying to get a rise. And then what happens? The next day, there's an article in the Telegraph by Austin Healey saying Steve Diamond should be in the New England setup.
Either great minds think alike, or Austin Healey is doing exactly the same as JB and just trying to get a rise out of people. A bit of clickbait, perhaps. I'm not quite sure which one it is.
Or Austin Healey listens to the podcast and hangs on JB's every word.
Finally, he's found a like-minded individual who he thinks is talking sense.
Well, the two of them can come up with more of that. JB will be back on the next podcast to come up with more ridiculous ideas that he and Austin Healey might agree with. So Ireland face Argentina, and we'll do a full look ahead on the next podcast. But it's easy to sort of say, oh, yeah, we've avoided New Zealand, a team that Ireland have never beaten, and go, yeah, well, brilliant, we've avoided that. That's great. You've now got Argentina. I don't think any Northern Hemisphere team would look forward to playing Argentina right now.
Absolutely not. I mean, it seems stupid to say it is the quarterfinals of the World Cup. It should be the best eight teams in the world. Argentina are a quality outfit. I've been saying it all tournament. I've been saying it for the Rugby Championship.
Yep.
When they comfortably beat South Africa in South Africa. They have got a very, very good pack, very good set piece, experienced operators, and their back line, particularly their back three, are electric, elusive runners. They can beat pretty much anyone on their day. And they pushed New Zealand very close in the opening fixture. And that fixture versus Ireland, particularly if Ireland are missing the players that we kind of expect them to be missing, that is a coin toss situation for me.
It really is.
It could go either way.
Josh 29 Harris was watching Argentina play in their final pool game and just invented a hashtag, hot potato rugby. It was a bit like that watching Argentina, wasn't it? They just came to play.
Yeah, and so did Namibia. Yeah. They both wanted to play rugby. Namibia's back three looked awesome. They got some real good backs. Their 10 was controlling things nicely. The two big centres. And their wingers and Chrysanthemum and Botha, they're 15, dangerous runners. Yeah. So that was really, really enjoyable.
So I spent the weekend in the Rugby World Cup fan zone in Manchester. I was hosting it there. And despite the fact England were out and England's game was in Manchester at the Manchester City Stadium, it was absolutely rammed. It was packed. What it did mean, though, is I saw even more of the advert in ins and outs from the ITV coverage. And I'm not going to miss Paloma Faith doing World in Union. That's horrible.
I know. It's...
Yeah.
Can they not just get something else? Can they not go back to the original?
Yeah, I know.
That was much better.
I know it was. And also, the number of Jack Whitehall adverts has tapered off recently. So that's a good thing as well. That's good news.
Now, Tim, in the fan zone, I didn't go. I couldn't make it because I was at the grand final.
Yeah.
The Super League, Rugby League grand final.
What a great game that was as well.
It was. Well, yeah, we could talk about that a little bit later.
There were loads of Leeds and Wigan fans in the fan zone during the day.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. Is it true that there was a Sam Burgess speed test as part of the...
Where did you hear that?
It was on a tweet. It was on a Canterbury tweet.
Yeah.
Isn't that like having an Adam Jones kicking school or a Dylan Hartley referee course?
What, are you suggesting Sam Burgess isn't quick?
Well, he's... As number sixes go, I think he's pretty rapid. He's not Tom Croft, but he's an athletic number six.
Yeah.
He's not in the same league as, say, Anthony Watson or Johnny May, someone like that.
You've got a point there. So, yeah, Canterbury had they have got their little hashtag and their mantra, committed to rugby, and on one side of their little Canterbury hub, they had committed to strength, and they had little videos and stuff with Jeff Parling, which, again, you were going to go, if you were going to pick someone with strength, you might have gone for a Romanian front rower.
One of the Georgian boys.
Rather than Jeff Parling, but, you know, that's fine. And then on the other side, it was committed to speed, and it was Sam Burgess. You had to do this little speed agility assault course thing and then hit stop on the timer and try and beat Sam Burgess's time.
Oh, really? Is that to make it competitive for the kind of average Joe?
Maybe that's what it is. I think it was just an excuse to have a massive, big, bigger than life-size picture of Sam Burgess in skin-tight Canterbury clobber.
Oh, I bet that looked good.
It did look very good. I'll give you that. No, it was good in the fan zone. You know what? I heard a good joke over the weekend because lots of people were coming up to me and all the Irish, Scotland and Welsh fans did like rubbing it in a little bit. That's fine. I can take that. Got a lot of people coming up going they enjoyed the podcast, which was very nice.
Excellent.
And they said to say hello to you and to JB.
Hello, guys.
Someone came up and I wrote this one down because I said I'll mention this on the podcast. So this guy was called Phil. He was from Merthyr. And he came up and he said it like it was a proper story. He said, I've just found an England shirt in a carrier bag on the side of the fan zone right down there. And I thought he was handing it in like lost property. He said, I can't believe it got thrown away just like that. Those bags are worth 5p now.
Hey. Very good.
Very good. Well, let's go from Phil in Merthyr. He was interested in Wales and their, well, it was defeat to Australia in the end. But it was interesting because there were loads of Wales fans in the fan zone and they were as soon as the full-time whistle started, they just started on with the, yay, we're through! they're through, and they've got South Africa in the quarterfinals. Australia showed that they've got a defence to go with that attack, didn't they?
That defence, second half, they were down to 13 men, and Wales had, well, it was more than 10 minutes, down to 14 and down to 13 men, more than 10 minutes, camped inside Australia's 22.
Yep.
Most of it 5 metres from Australia's line. And the defence was incredible, absolutely heroic. Partly, I do feel it was a little bit helped by Wales seeming only to want to take route one.
Yeah, when you've got 15 and they've got 13, logic would dictate that, hold on a minute, if we hit up a couple of times and then go,
yeah,
we'll have space.
It was kind of, there was one, or well, several phases of play, but one in particular where they had a crash ball. They had a scrum on the right-hand side. They used Jamie Roberts as a crash ball, sucked a few defenders in, and then there was huge gaps. There was like a three-man overlap. And instead of using hands, they crashed George North in exactly the same play that they used to crash Jamie Roberts in.
Gatland ball.
It it just didn't feel like the best use of George North's talent when there's one defender on and 30 yards worth of try line. If I was Welsh, would have been frustrated with that.
I completely agree. Sam Warburton, he had a Chris Robshaw moment, didn't he?
Yeah, he had a few opportunities to kick sticks in that phase. I can understand why he didn't take them. I heard an interview with him today where he said, well, if you're against 14 men or 13 men, you'll back yourself to actually get over the line. But that's kind of, it's a similar argument to Robshaw's, and they almost would have been better.
Certainly.
Take the points, reset, you're 3 points closer, you're within a score, and go again. And yeah, it did feel like he made, and obviously very easy to say with hindsight, but it felt like he made the wrong decision.
Yeah, easy to say with hindsight, like you say. Mike Tindall was in the Rugby World Cup fan zone, so I had a chat with him, and he was saying he thinks it's Australia's to lose. He was talking in those kind of terms, like they're the what he saw, and you know, we can all watch rugby, but I think when you've won a World Cup, you probably look at things in a slightly different way. And he said, just what I saw them do to England is something I've not seen from any other team in the World Cup.
Yeah,
but mind you, Wales' defence held Australia out in the main, didn't they?
It did. Yeah, Wales' defence was very good as well. Credit to them. The two most impressive things, I mean, the England game was a demonstration of how clinical Australia's attacking finish can be.
Absolutely.
The Wales game was a demonstration of the power of their scrum, because they completely dismantled. Wales had strengthened their front row,
yep,
bringing in Paul James and Samson Lee, who are renowned as being good scrummaging props, and they got taken apart by that Australian front row. And the Australian defence, like we said, it was sensational.
When we reflect back on this World Cup, I think we're going to look at the massive impact of coaching, because I wouldn't mind betting that, save for a couple of players who have something particularly magical, there's a lot of similarity. And actually, you look at how well Namibia have shown up, and they've got Phil Jones, an experienced coach. You look at how well Romania stood up, and how close they ran some teams, including Italy over the weekend, and they've got Lynn Howes, an experienced coach. You look at Australia and how they've turned their scrum around to a weapon in 1 year, and they got Mario Ledesma,
yep,
one of the best scrummaging exponents in,
yeah,
world rugby in the last 20 years, from his position at hooker with Argentina.
Argentina and Toulouse.
And, yeah,
you want pedigree from a front rower.
Oh, my God, exactly. And I honestly think we're going to be... And Joe Schmidt, you know, all those Irish players went down, and like you say, you talked about Ireland's performance, and they were shrewd and they were smart and they had a game plan and they slotted people in. I wonder whether it's, rather than players we're talking about, we're actually talking about, and hopefully the RFU take note, the massive importance of experienced, pedigree driven coaches and how they squeeze that extra 5-10% out of players.
Yes, yeah, I'd say it is looking more and more like that.
Eddie Jones with Japan.
Perfect example, Tim.
There you go.
Yeah.
There's so many examples in this World Cup.
Yeah. In the Australia-Wales game,
yeah,
so I was in Old Trafford, supposed to be watching the Super League Grand Final, and I was the only man, obviously, watching the Australia-Wales game. And all the Rugby League fans that I was with kind of kept on popping their head in and saying, oh, it's 15-6 or it's 12-6. Looks like a rubbish game, that. I was thinking that... Someone said it on Twitter. I think Roars mentioned it on Twitter.
I've got it written down. He said, Rory, a bit an Ulsterman and a regular listener to the podcast. He said, tweeted to @RugbyPodcast, this game, referring to Wales Australia, is simultaneously what is so great about rugby union and also everything rugby league fans hate.
Yes, yeah, because they wouldn't understand that this absolutely sensational defence, tactical game, territory game, is so important and so good to watch. But there's no tries.
Yeah.
not a single try in the game. It was amazing.
Who wants to watch kick and catch?
Yeah, there was a bit of that.
Yeah, a bit of that. Oh, by the way, at Old Trafford, and I thought this was a bit of a masterstroke from the organisers of the Super League, so they invited Stephen Armitage. Bearing in mind England with all the talk about an out-and-out seven... and you had England playing at the Etihad Stadium, Man City's ground, limply bowing out of the tournament. at Old Trafford, they'd invited Stefan Armitage to come and watch the Super League Grand Final. So he was just about 4 miles away from where England were playing.
Well, that is, I didn't know that. I would have liked to find him out and had a beer with him, get his opinion, and then watch the Leeds-Wigan game, which in itself was a really good game. Mm. It was so important for Leeds. It was them trying to complete the treble in the season, and also three of their long-standing players.
Including Kevin Sinfield, who's going to rugby union with Leeds Carnegie.
With Leeds Carnegie.
Yorkshire Carnegie.
Yes, Yorkshire Carnegie. There's another signing for Yorkshire Carnegie this week. A chap I used to play with, a lad called Ben Black, who has propped at Sedgley Park for the past 5 years and has...
I love it when players from lower leagues get a little call up. Like there's a lad at Sale Sharks who came to the fan zone as well. I say lad, he's 27, but he was at Rosslyn Park last season, and he used to play rugby at school with Danny Cipriani. Danny Cipriani managed to get him a free trial, so he's been doing pre-season with Sale for free, and he's got himself a full-time professional contract with Sale Sharks as a winger.
Yeah, it's Nev Edwards, isn't it?
Nev Edwards, yeah.
I've played against him a few times. Handy back three player. It will be interesting to see how he goes at Sale and if he manages to get some game time. Going back to the rugby league, getting sidetracked. Yeah, Leeds had Sinfield, they had Jamie Peacock Kylie Leuai, who between them have got more than 1,000 appearances for Leeds.
Wow.
All three of them finishing their career at Leeds Rhinos and going for the treble. And the game was kind of back and forward, yo-yo. Wigan score first, then Leeds looked dominant, then second half Wigan were really on top, went back into the lead, and Leeds stole it at the end. And it was just a great atmosphere, 70,000 fans in Old Trafford, and a really good game, good demonstration of what league can be. So I loved it. I really loved it.
My eyes were simultaneously on the Etihad Stadium, and very, very briefly on England. I actually thought you got a glimpse into the future at that moment when it was Ford, Slade, Joseph, Watson, Noel, Brown in your back line. It was just exciting. It was just exciting and on the edge of your seat kind of stuff. So
yeah,
more of that.
And a glimpse of the future with Nick Easter getting man of the match.
Yeah,
a deserved man of the match as well. I thought he was the best player.
And I hope this is a lesson, because what you hear it happen with football all the time. When England inevitably get knocked out of a major tournament, and by the way, well done to Wales and Northern Ireland on getting through to their football tournaments. But when England inevitably go out of a major tournament, there's always people on football phone-ins and on Twitter and everything going, just get rid of anyone like over 25. Get the youngsters in. Let's get all the youngsters in. And I think there's been similar kind of
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
I'm hearing from England Rugby Union fans, but I think there's a perfect example of why that's just pointless. And that's the fact that that's exactly what Stuart Lancaster did to Nick Easter 4 years ago. Said, yes, you won't be available for the Rugby World Cup, so I'm not going to pick you now. And he scores a hat-trick for England at the Rugby World Cup.
Yes, and he looked very, very good.
He did. Wales, then, they've lost another player. Maybe that's why JB's actually not here. He says he's in Sorrento, but he's actually in, like, pre-training camp, just being assessed.
He's in a cryo chamber.
Being scanned by Warren Gatland.
Normally to improve performance, we put these guys in for 2 minutes at a time, but JB, you've got a long way to catch up. I'm going to put you in here for 2 weeks and see what happens.
I reckon you might be right there. But Liam Williams, out.
Is he done for the tournament?
I think he's done for the tournament, yeah.
That's a big blow.
Yeah.
He can cover all of the back three positions. He can allow George North to go to 13. That is a big blow. It'd be interesting to see what they do then, whether North goes back to the wing and they bring in Tyler Morgan or Hook to outside centre.
Yeah, I suspect they'll do that.
Is it finally time for Big Gav to get a call?
Oh, come on, let's do it. Big Gav.
Big Gav.
Get him in. Well, yeah, they've got South Africa, a pretty ominous opponent, and Wales got their work cut out, haven't they?
They certainly have, yeah. I think if it was any of the big three Southern Hemisphere teams that Wales had to play in the quarterfinals, they'd probably go for South Africa. They've beat them fairly recently.
That's true.
But I do still think South Africa have got an advantage given the number of injuries that Wales have. If it was a fully fit Wales squad, I'd say it's 50-50. As it is, it's probably slightly in South Africa's favour.
Scotland.
Yes. God, they made hard work of it.
What a great game, though. Samoa, those boys came to play. They were players.
It was brilliant. It's such a transformation from the dreadful, kind of turgid performance, error-ridden performance they had the previous week against Japan. They came to actually play some rugby, which is what they do best, and they looked brilliant.
They did.
And they were leading for most of the game, weren't they? It was only, 20 minutes to go when Scotland finally kicked their way ahead, and then the Laidlaw try, which Laidlaw, I think he scored 26 points.
Yeah.
He was superb, including that late try. But it was a hell of a game.
So well done, Scotland. I hope you enjoyed the Rugby World Cup. We'll see you out of the Rugby World Cup after next weekend.
Scotland are looking... I mean, that wasn't their best game, but they've got a good solid set piece. They've got some good dangerous runners in the forwards. I've said it before, they're back three.
Yeah.
Seymour, Maitland and Hogg.
Yeah, it's great.
Are as good as virtually any team. And Finn, Russell and Laidlaw as halfbacks.
Stuart Hogg doesn't look 24, 25. He looks like he's had a tough paper round.
Yes.
Finn Russell, again, just they've got a really exciting back line, and they've got a really decent set piece. And lo and behold, dare I say it, they've got a coach that's maybe got more out of them collectively than they could. Who knows?
There's a theme on this podcast,
Tim. There is a theme, isn't there? But you know what? And I mean, and Scotland, you've got one more week to gloat, so make the most of it. Gloat to every Englishman you can for the next week, because you're going no further in this Rugby World Cup, and that's all you'll have left to hang on to is the fact that England didn't even get to the quarterfinals. I can't see any other outcome.
I give Scotland maybe 1 in 20, maybe 1 in 50 of beating Australia.
Yeah.
The only thing for Australia is potential injuries. David Pocock, maybe. Israel Folau, maybe.
Is Hooper allowed back?
Hooper was just... It was just a one-match suspension.
Yeah.
Which, when you compare it to the Tuilagi, ludicrous five-match...
That has been downgraded.
It's been downgraded, but it's still... They still deem it to be an offence.
Yeah.
That's an absolute travesty.
Yeah, it's a travesty that he's been banned of any time. Lost any time. The fact that he wasn't playing against Scotland is a travesty. He was just playing rugby. There's lots of people been saying that New Zealand are creaking, showing cracks just a little bit.
I mean, that was a good game as well.
Tonga,
the Tonga game.
Oh, by the way, it's been pointed out, and I must mention, at Rugby Podcast on Twitter, they said, boys, can you explain why Steve Maffey for Tonga was wearing just one glove? It's like Michael Jackson fashion.
Straight off to the golf course.
Yeah.
He's going to get 9 holes in after the game.
I think Dan Bigger should wear one glove, because when he's doing his pre-kick routine, he would look more like Michael Jackson. It would be really good.
I like the tweet that we... it wasn't actually tweeted to us, but we retweeted it about New Zealand. Let me get it up.
Just while you're waiting with that one, I like this as a review for the podcast, because during the World Cup, just like hopefully, there's lots of people finding rugby union for the first time as fans or... finding and rekindling their love of rugby union. There's a lot of people finding the Egg Chasers Rugby podcast, and we're very grateful for it. And Cracked Writer on Twitter is one of them. Said, I've just found you. Great entertainment. Tim and Phil are on the money, and also good to hear Garth Crooks on Mic 3. Hello, JB.
Yeah, the tweet on Friday night by Sean Wilson. So this was after... a huge, huge attacking pressure by Tonga on the New Zealand line, and the referee refused to give a penalty try. And Sean Wilson tweeted, referee gives the All Blacks a final warning. Next time, he'll have no choice other than to give them another final warning.
Oh, I know.
Which
nailed it.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. In my opinion, there could have been a couple of penalty tries.
One thing as well, I don't know how this works, and Joe has tweeted to us at Rugby Podcast and said, how does it work with who's classed as the home team and the away team in quarterfinals? Will it be New Zealand against France because they are the first in the group? He says he doesn't want them in grey. Yeah, grey's not... It's an ugly second kit they've got, isn't it? And France's white, red away kit is beautiful.
Yeah, that would be better, wouldn't it?
That red, would be better.
Yeah, black and red.
Yeah.
I'd go for that. I don't actually know. For the pool games, it's all a coin toss because England lost the coin toss against Fiji and we're in the away dressing room. But I don't actually know.
Mm. Smithy has said, Wayne Barnes must referee France v New Zealand in Cardiff next week. I love that it's in the Millennium Stadium, or the Principality Stadium, as it's now called. I love that it's in that. Because, I mean, New Zealand fans will be nervous, as you like. Thierry Desautoirs will be there just as he was 8 years ago.
Yes, making 37 or 38 tackles, an international record.
I mean, it's all over for New Zealand. It's game over again. Enjoy the next week of gloating, New Zealand, because you're out of the tournament next week. I don't necessarily agree with that statement, but...
No.
Oh, it's the one that all neutral fans wanted to see again, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's got so much history, the New Zealand-France fixture, hasn't it?
Yeah.
But on New Zealand, they've lost a player. They've lost Woodcock, who's now out for the tournament. He's been completely ruled out, which is a blow. He scored a try. He would have been their starting loose head, even though he was creaking. The whole scrum was creaking.
They got the other Franks brother to come in there, haven't they?
I'm not sure who was. They've got... I can't remember.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway.
It's only a prop. Don't worry. not the ones that score the tries. Not the ones who clearly have a team barber and get their... high and tight haircuts. I have to say, in the back lines in this World Cup, there's been some real proper manicured haircuts going on, like boy band haircuts, isn't there?
There's more than a few. I think the team that gets away with it best, they've got some of the most ridiculous haircuts, but they pull it off, is the Japan team.
Oh, yes!
I think they can get away with it.
In fact, what's going on with the Japan match? Because as we're recording this podcast, they're in their final game against USA.
And it has just finished a couple of minutes ago, USA 18, Japan 28.
We were talking New Zealand Tonga and Milner Scudder. We were talking about in the last podcast that we think we would put Milner Scudder with Surveyor on the wing, and he kind of cemented his position in the team over Naholo.
I would say so, yes, particularly with Naholo's. He had a great opportunity in the first half and dropped the ball with kind of a three-man overlap, and then Milner Scudder, he only scored two, didn't he? But set up a couple as well and just looked... all round, very good.
Phil, you've selected a best team from the Tier 2 nations at this Rugby World Cup.
I have.
Well, I want to hear it, and I'll give you my thoughts on it as we go through. And if you agree, disagree, think Phil's missed anyone, get in touch with us at Rugby Podcast on Twitter, tim@eggchasers.com if you want to email. Go on, Phil.
Now, it's a real shame that JB isn't here, because he could have helped with some of the pronunciations of these small, lesser tiered players.
You sure?
So my props, probably the two most impressive scrummaging packs in the tournament. I've gone for Masataka Mikami, the Japanese loose head, and David Zirakashvili, the Clermont tight head, with Hooker from... I considered having another Japanese player, Shota Hori, who plays for the Rebels, who has been excellent. Mm. But I've gone for Torsten van Jaarsveld, who has the distinction of having made the most tackles in the tournament so far.
Really?
Yes.
That's a great fact.
Particularly from a hooker as well.
Yeah.
Very impressive. And a hooker in the same team as Jacques Berger.
Who was the prop who was playing his last game for Namibia? 50th cap as well in the game against Argentina. And they let him have the conversion at the very end. That was a nice moment.
That was a very nice moment.
No Romanians. You can't pick them all, can you?
Yeah, Romanian's scrum was very impressive as well. Had it been 4 years ago, I would have had Marius Tinku, the Romanian hooker, but not this time.
Into the row, then.
I've gone for Leona Nakarawa.
Well, Fiji is tier two because they were actually ranked ninth in the tournament.
I know. So my definition of tier two, and this may or may not be correct, is the tier one is the 10 teams who compete in the Six Nations and the Rugby Championship.
That's fair enough.
Everyone below that is
tier two. So there's 10 other teams. Fine, yeah, cool.
So Nakarawa, and I've gone for Cuddles, Jamie Cuddmore. Oh, obviously, I've gone for Jamie Cuddmore.
He did put in a big shift a couple of times, didn't he?
Yes.
Yeah, I'll go with that.
Back row, there's some serious, serious competition in the back row. Honourable mentions to to my favourite named number sevens, Jack Lam and Jack Ram.
Jack Ram and Jack Lam, yeah.
Of Samoa and Bristol and Tonga and the Auckland Blues, respectively.
Yeah.
Also,
by the way, Auckland Blues, for lots of people saying that England don't have an out-and-out seven, we maybe do in the shape of former Auckland Blue, now Leicester Tiger, Brendan O'Connor, which we've had people talking up on tweeting to us this week, saying that he's got an English grandparent and could be an English is an English qualified player with ambitions to play for England.
Yes. I think it's a little bit early to say. Obviously, he is qualified, so purely from an administrative point of view, he can play when he lands in Leicester. I think it's a bit too early. I mean, he's 25. He's had a handful of Super Rugby caps, but never really cemented a position and certainly never been pushing the All Blacks. So he's a bit off yet.
Our Premiership preview podcast will be coming later this week, so subscribe on iTunes and you'll get that one as well. Pro 12 as well, obviously. So the rest of your back row.
My back row, I've gone for a massive back row, ball-carrying back row.
Oh, JB will love that.
Yes, JB would be very happy with this. I've gone for Michael Leach, Japan number six and captain, as my blind side. I've gone for Mamuka Gorgodza, who has been one of the players of the tournament so far.
So good.
Scoring tries, making big hits, man of the match against New Zealand. Yeah. And not many players playing against New Zealand get man of the match. And then my number eight, I've gone for Samu Manoa.
He's shown up big again.
Yes. USA have struggled a little bit in a couple of their games, but he just consistently gets over the gain line. Dominant force.
So, Toulon, all you need to do is sign Michael Leach and, and you've got Phil's tier two back row.
Yes. Number nine.
Yeah.
It's a shame he got injured because he was so good in the first couple of games. Nico Matawalu. Number 10, I've also gone for Fiji. I've gone for Ben Volavola.
He's been a real find. I mean, we knew about him a little bit beforehand, but I thought he'd be more unpredictable and more erratic. And he's actually shown a really great, really elusive when he's on the run and in broken field play, which is what you want to see from a Fijian back. But he did the business.
Yeah. He's got notable mentions to the other two Pacific Islanders fly halves, 2CPC and Kurt Marath, who have both kicked and controlled very well.
Yeah.
In the centres, honourable mention to Johan Dasil, Namibian 12, mm-hmm. who scored against New Zealand. But I've gone for Threaten Palamo, the USA 12, who's at Saracen. I think he's contracted at Saracens, but loaned out to London Welsh currently.
But there's something else like the Romanian winger, Furcu. Is he still at
Furcu's
Saracens?
Furcu's at Saracens, yeah. He played in most of the LV Cup games.
Good on you, Saracens, for championing these tier two nation players. Like it.
Freeing up more of your salary cap.
Yeah.
more of the imaginary salary cap that you do or do not adhere to. And alongside him, I've gone for Kieran Hearn of Canada,
yes,
who has the distinction of having the most carries over the gain line in the whole competition so far.
Oh, what a great fact!
Which is a hell of a fact.
And that's a fact just backed up by your own eyes, just the feel for it.
Oh, yes,
he's cut some amazing lines, outside breaks.
Yeah, he's looked really good.
He's looked really good.
My two wingers, I've gone for DTH Van der Merwe, another Canadian.
Yeah,
who four tries in four games. Absolutely superb. I think he's made the most meters in the tournament as well as DTH Van der Merwe. And Taluse Vianu of Tonga, who's been very good as well.
I'm really enjoying your pronunciation.
Better than JB.
Yeah.
Not as good as Nick Mullins.
No. Who is?
Not even close. And then at 15, honourable mention to Kathleen Furcu of Saracens, mm-hmm. and Tim Nanai Williams, who's been very good.
Yeah, he has.
But it couldn't have been anyone other than Ayumu Goromaru, the
hero.
Now legendary Japanese fullback, who today surpassed 700 international points in the game against USA.
Yeah.
And also, apparently, would like to play in England. So, I'd love to see that happen. Really? I think there's a few. There's quite a few Premiership clubs who could do with a player of his calibre.
The vine that you tweeted of, I'm just having a look on our Twitter account, and the vine that you tweeted of Sean O'Brien punching Pascal Pape has just been retweeted by Benjamin Kayser, which is what Nick Mullins calls him. Of course, Eddie Butler would call him Benjamin Kayser.
I keep shouting Scott Spadding.
Spadding
and Noah Nakatasi.
And what's the... Yeah, there's Benjamin Kayser.
Rory. Oh, no. Coquel.
And when he was part of the team, Deddy Doma was the other one. I am Johnny King on Twitter said genuine, because we haven't seen the end of the Japan USA game, but he said genuinely moving as Ayuma Goromaru, who you just mentioned as your fullback at the tournament for the Tier 2 Nations, receives his second Man of the Match award at the Rugby World Cup USA versus Japan, and he's got tears in his eyes as he receives his another Man of the Match award. Japan are the first nation ever to get 3 victories in the pool stages and not progress to the quarterfinals.
More victories than England. Question. So that's 10. That's 10 teams that we've picked those players from.
Mm-hmm.
There are 2 teams who didn't make it through to the quarterfinals of the other available teams, and that's England and Italy. Based on the performances in the tournament, how many players from England and Italy would get into that Tier 2 nation side?
That's a great question. Anthony Watson, probably.
I'd say Watson would do. I think Van der Merwe has been superb, but Watson is a cut above.
Yeah, but I'm trying to only just judge it on what we've seen.
Just on the performances, yeah.
Anthony Watson and possibly Owen Farrell at 10.
I think a 10. Owen Farrell... George Ford, hard done by, looked good when he's come on. But yeah, you could probably slot one of those two in. I'd say none of the England pack would make it in ahead of that Tier 2 nation pack.
Isn't that unbelievable?
Not a single one.
Not a single England forward. Like, again, this is another feature of this World Cup. When you look at it, England's backs we're getting excited about, and England's forwards have just gone backwards.
Yeah.
What Dan Cole, Joe Marler, what happened to them?
Yeah.
And we were talking about them as genuinely world-class about a year ago.
Yeah. And I do still stand by Marler. I do really rate him. But there's, if you're an individual element in a pack that is going backwards, it's very difficult for you to look good, particularly when you are at the coalface.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'd suggest... And normally, you'd put Parise in there, but he's been injured for most of the tournament.
Yeah.
Had one superb performance, but I don't think he'd get in that Tier 2 nation team.
Isn't that amazing? We are going to be doing our full preview of the quarterfinals, so we're not going to dwell too much on that. We'll let the week play out, see what injuries are looking likely, wait for the teams to be announced, and then we'll do a full preview of the Rugby World Cup quarterfinals in due course, as well as the Premiership and Pro 12. Is the Pro 12, is this week one, or have they been going? No, they've been going all along.
Yeah, they've had at least 3 fixtures, I think, so far, maybe 4.
I'd love to know what the attendances are for that. But one other feature of the game, and I thought this was another brilliant tweet we've received, and proving once again we do have really intelligent, interesting, well-informed listeners, so thank you very much for listening. But lots of people questioning the ending a half or ending a game after a ball has been held up over the try line.
Yes.
Now, which game was it this happened in? Was this New Zealand-Tonga?
It was New Zealand-Tonga, and Tonga had a huge amount of pressure. In New Zealand's 22, Kieran Reid was sent to the bin for collapsing a maul, which could have been a penalty try. There was then several scrums that could have been penalty tries. They were then held up over the line in what was the 42nd minute, and the game stopped immediately. They'd had a penalty from a scrum, and they'd taken another scrum almost in front of the sticks.
But that
rule then incentivizes you to go for the sticks. It decentivizes attacking rugby. So it seems like a very, very easy law change. Sorry, it's a law, not a rule, for people who will be correcting me on that. It's a law. It's very easy law change to make that would incentivize attacking rugby, make the game flow better, and give you just better ends to games rather than the anti-climax that happened.
I know, because Tonga were banging on the door all that time. It felt like a slight injustice.
It did.
And it's so easy to change, so yeah, we should.
Yeah.
We should.
Yes, very easy. I know they're looking at law, World Rugby are looking at law changes at the moment, and that should be, it's not even one to consider, just change the law. Just do it now.
The other thing which is quite interesting, and again, this is probably World Rugby's fault for the way that they drew the pools 2.5 years ago, but we know that the top three in each pool will automatically qualify for the 2019 World Cup in Japan. So England, we scraped into the world, the 2019 World Cup. Fiji, that means, will have to qualify. Samoa will also have to qualify because Japan did so well in Pool B.
Yes.
And Tonga also finished fourth in their pool. Now, I believe I'm right in saying, Phil, that because of that and the qualification set up for the Rugby World Cup 2019... you've got the 12 teams that have already qualified from finishing in the top three in Pool A, B, C and D. And only one of Fiji, Tonga or Samoa will be in Japan as it stands.
So if, and it is an if, Driving Maul, at Driving Maul on Twitter, they've written a very good article explaining the current situation and the qualification for the process for the past two tournaments. And if it stays the same as the past two tournaments, then only one of them will qualify. There would just be one qualifying spot from Oceania. They could easily change that by, so the way it goes, you've got those 12 teams, you then have seven qualification places from the different regions, and then you have one repechage.
The hosts
space.
The hosts automatically qualify though, don't they? You would think.
Well, the hosts in the past have always been in within the top top 12.
And Japan are.
And Japan are. So it's never come up before.
Okay.
And it doesn't come up now. So that they don't need to change that. So if it was the same as last time, there was no place in Oceania, for Oceania, in the repechage. They could very easily change that to have one or even two teams represented in the repechage, but then only one of them can possibly qualify from that. So even with fairly simple law change for the process, they would still, one of the three Pacific Island teams would miss out as things stand.
But if, I mean, you're saying if they change the laws, but if they change the rules on how teams get to the World Cup, then if you were someone like Russia, who just missed out, or one of the teams that still need to qualify, again, like Romania, then you'd be a bit cheesed off that they seem to be stacking the cards in favour of the teams that have always gone to Rugby World Cups, in this case, Samoa, Tonga, Fiji.
Yes. Now, what I will say is that based on the previous two systems, Japan have had to qualify. There's one Asia spot for qualification, and Japan have had to use the qualification process to get it. Now, because they're automatically qualified, it would go to the second-ranked Asian team, which would be Hong Kong, which there is a huge fall-off. So what I would propose doing would be to split Oceania, so have New Zealand, Australia as separate because they are pretty much always going to qualify, and then you group Asia and Oceania as a single entity and have it as like a Pacific group.
They kind of do that with football, don't they?
Yeah, you have the Asia and Oceania all grouped as one. So Tonga, Samoa, Fiji and Asia, so all of
Hong
those.
Hong Kong,
China,
if
Thailand.
China ever...
Like teams that would...
Do China play rugby, take it seriously? They've got a team.
They've got
they?
A team, but they don't take it seriously.
No.
They'd be kind of maybe top 50 ranked in world rugby rankings. So to group all of them, and then they can split the available qualification places, and that could very simply change it. You might, as Hong Kong, be a bit annoyed that this automatic qualification process, because of the improvements Japan made, is getting taken away from them. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. Because it would be a shame. It would certainly be a shame if only one of them qualified. But it's in World Rugby's hands. I mean, I guess the other alternative is either create an extra pool.
So there has been another development in the rugby dungeon, which I just want to share with you. Have you been busy in the rugby dungeon, Phil?
I haven't, Tim.
Right, so last time I told you about the fact that there is a camera on a tripod in the rugby dungeon, which JB's put there. I don't know what he's thinking about there. Do you think he's thinking we're going to film this and put a video version of the podcast up somewhere?
I'm just worried he's actually watching us now.
Yeah. There's also, I hadn't noticed it before, but there's a mirror.
There's a full length mirror.
There's a full length mirror and a camera on a tripod. And I've just noticed the sofa is a wipe clean leather sofa. I think this is a set.
It's a set?
A set for some sort of activities.
There's a desk, there's a sofa, there's a video camera. What kind of set could this possibly be, Tim?
No comment. But I think I want to get out of here before someone comes out in a gimp mask from our rugby dungeon. Right, like I say, let's see how the injury situation goes on with the Welsh, the Irish, and any other players, and wait for the team selections, and then we'll have a full preview of the Rugby World Cup quarterfinals in what has already been the best Rugby World Cup ever. And, of course, the Aviva Premiership returns, and there's so much to talk about there. And we'll be doing that all in our next podcast later this week. So at Rugby Podcast on Twitter, get in touch, subscribe on iTunes, listen on Acast, and we'll see you next time, Phil.
Cheers, Tim.
JB will be back next time as well.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
And he'll be about 2 stone heavier after all that pasta and red wine.
Amen. In a bit.